Hey y'all, I'm Sammy, your host of the You Were Made for More podcast. John 10:10 is a promise that Jesus came down to earth so that we would have life and have it abundantly. My prayer is that this podcast and all of the content that we put out would remind every student that they were made for more, simply because of who they were created to be. My own walk with the Lord and my relationships with the teenagers that I disciple have shown me that once we understand whose we are, the game changes. Or in other words, transformation happens. Our identity changes everything. We recognize that it takes investment and partnership between the church and parents to raise teens who know and believe who they are in Jesus. And we're here to help. So buckle up as we take this journey and take a look at what God has to say about friendships, relationships, sexuality, dating, and all the things in between. Today on the You Were Made for More podcast, we have the opportunity to hear a conversation that I had with the founder of So Loved, Mindy Summers. Mindy is a young wife and mom who 6 years ago began a ministry to people who are making a living in the sex industry, and now we call that ministry So Loved. According to many sources I've read online, Mindy and her team really don't desire any attention, so I was really honored when I sent her an email and asked if she would be a guest on the You Were Made for More podcast, and she said yes. This is what Mindy has to say about So Loved. We are a team of women and men through prayer and security who reach out to women here locally within the sex industry. Our entire goal is to build relationships and sisterhood with the ladies in the clubs. We want them to know that they are loved, valued, seen, and that we so enjoy who they are. Every month, we bring gifts, homemade treats, handwritten love notes, and homemade meals to each club. It's been a true honor and joy, and our vision statement is this: ministering to women in the sex industry, helping them see they are valued and dearly loved by Jesus, and believing for lasting freedom for their lives. I am sure that Mindy and her team are living the gospel out. That's for sure. And after our conversation, I would consider her a friend and someone I admire. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. So let's dive in. Welcome to the You Were Made for More podcast. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. I know a little bit about you, obviously, because we've been like communicating via email and I've seen some of your stuff online. But for the people that are just tuning in listening today, can you give us kind of like a Spark Notes version of who you are, where we can find you, what your family's like, all of that stuff?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super honored to be here on this podcast with you today. So I'm Mindy Summers. I live in Missouri. And oh goodness, where do I start? wonderful husband. I've been married to him for almost 12 years now. And we have four young children, ages 8, 5, 3, and I have a 2-month-old baby. So we
Wow. A new baby.
We are busy over here. Yeah, baby, and she is the easiest baby. For anyone wondering about baby four, I really believe in baby four. She's real easy. So anyway, I think they have to kind of fall in line at that point. But yeah, so that's a little about me. I grew up in Missouri. I've lived here my whole life, except for 3 years out of college. We did some ministry in other places. But yeah, so now we're here. My husband had a big career change and is working for a roofing company now. And I stay home with all of these little people and run this really incredible team of people that reaches out to women in the sex industry. And goodness, we are just loving our neighbors and being awkward and doing all of the things that we do. So
that is awesome. Love that. That was a great intro. I love that you said being awkward, because many times the things that God calls us to do are awkward because they're things that no one else wants to do. So. Yes,
and I specialize in being awkward. I really kind of enjoy it and embrace it with people. So I welcome it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I kind of want to start from the wherever this point in your life is, from the beginning of your faith journey. Like, have you always been a Christian? What did that look like? When did a relationship for Jesus kind of become real to you, in essence?
Yeah. Oh, I love sharing about this. So I grew up in the church. My parents just graciously raised me in the church and taught me about Jesus, taught me about his love for us. And so I had many wonderful years of upbringing in the church and came to know the Lord when I was 5 years old, sitting on a brown couch. My mom led me to Jesus in our living room. And my goodness, I feel like his grace has been so sufficient. And he has, revealed himself to me in such a very captivating way that I wanted to stay put with him. So everyone has struggle. Goodness, today I have struggle. We all have struggle. But I really fell in love with who Jesus is and tried to stay put with him through all these years. And he's been teaching me so many things. And it's just been a real joy walking with a God who's the Almighty and the Creator, but he's also like our friend and like our comfort and all of the things that he is. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Jesus. So
that's good. That's, we are too. That's so awesome. I kind of want to go back to something you said in your intro, since we have a little background of your faith and kind of how that has been, a thing in your life since you were 5 years old and your family raised you in the church and you've kind of been learning what it means to follow him and walk with him and be a disciple. You mentioned that you lead a team of people who minister to men and women. I think both of them, from what I've read, they are either working in the sex industry or a part of the sex industry in some way, shape, or form. And can you talk a little bit about that? I know that your ministry is called So Loved, but how did it start? Where does the name come from? Give us kind of a background on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so when I was about 8 years old, I remember one of, a missionary, she came to our church and she was talking on a Sunday night about her ministry in India, where they were reaching, victims of trafficking in the brothels there. And I remember being 8 years old and not totally understanding what I was hearing or what I was, really like what she was sharing. And, but still, like, my heart was just gripped for girls and women around the world who are not being treated fairly, who are being taken advantage of. And so honestly, I can still pinpoint exactly where God began to birth that in my heart. It was in a church pew when I was 8 years old. And, so throughout the years, God took me on a journey, was very gracious to help me along. I really, through high school, he started opening my eyes to the one that wasn't going along with everyone else, the one who was left out, the one who was, not fitting in or was being made fun of, or the one who didn't really fit the mold, the one who was hurting, the one who had to, like, just all the things. And I really asked God to develop that kind of compassion and empathy in me. So over many, many years, and then through college, I really studied quite a bit on, I asked God to grow me in my heart for the one. And, after college, we, went into youth ministry, and we were in youth ministry for several years. And, we moved to Missouri, back to Missouri. And, when we did that, we ended up driving by a strip club, that I was actually with my pastor's wife at the time. And I noticed that there were three strip clubs in our pretty tiny town here. And, And I was like, wow, this is so close to the church. Like literally, like it's like, there's a church, there's a school, here's a strip club. And this is like in the Bible Belt, you know, here in Missouri. And I was taken back and asked the pastor, like, what do you, you know, does anyone reach these girls? What does that look like being so close? Because I feel like the church, like they are in the neighborhoods they're in for a reason, like to reach those people with the love of Jesus and to build community and to care for their neighbors. And she said, well, nothing, but we've been praying that God would send somebody that would have a heart for these women. And I was like, well, I definitely have a heart for these women, but yeah. I don't know what that looks like, right? Like, cause I don't have a history in the industry. I don't really know. So I started praying and praying and praying, and I met another woman who had the same heart. We started praying and doing prayer like walks and just asking the Holy Spirit like what he would have in this. And man, we delved into all kinds of research and attending conferences on exploitation, on sexual assault, on sexual abuse, on human trafficking. Locally, globally, reading books, all of the things. There are just a million excellent resources out there. And, so then at one point, after about a year and a half of praying, we decided to go ahead and start down the road of ministering to these women. So one day I was in my yard and I was, gardening. Now, like not gardening like tomatoes. I don't know how to garden tomatoes at all, but, I was like planting flowers in my yard, and I heard the Lord speak to me and say, you need to make necklaces. And I was like, okay, Lord, I don't really make necklaces, but I mean, you're God. So if you want me to make necklaces, I guess I can do that. And, I felt like he was saying, make necklaces and sell them in order to raise money to reach out to these girls. And so a couple weeks later, I was at a church service, and they had a pastor who had a prison ministry at this service. And he was sharing this hymn that he prays and sings with the prisoners. And the hymn is called Rescue the Perishing. I don't know if you've ever heard that hymn. I had never heard it before.
And I have never heard that. I'm going to have to look it up.
You'll have to Google it. It's called Rescue the Perishing. I just was weeping at that church service thinking, wow, okay, this hymn needs to be directly correlated with the necklaces. So we started making necklaces with the sheet music of the hymn in them. They're little glass pendants. And at that time I thought, okay, I'll make like 20 of these, and my mom and my aunt and my best friend will have to buy these from me. but like today, like I think we've sold over 500 of them or something crazy.
Wow.
So God has just been very faithful. So he had a much bigger plan, obviously, from the beginning than I did. And, so we just started showing up, and now to date, we've been doing this for 6 years, and, we have a team of about 10 women and about 10 men. And every month we go to visit all three of the clubs in our area. We bring them gifts, and we bring them meals and treats, like little homemade wrapped treats, and then love notes. And we get to visit with the women for several hours right there in the clubs, and just show like value and dignity to where they are. So I mean, there's so much behind the why of this. I think so many people don't really know. And I know we'll probably get into a lot of this later on in the podcast, but the things that we're pulling on my heartstring is that, like worldwide, there's more than $97 billion of revenue per year that goes into the sex industry. So that's bigger than like the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball combined. Like this is like a massive, industry, and, it's fueling human trafficking. Like the sex industry and human trafficking are very, very much, intertwined. And, you know, I think most of us know now that in human trafficking, there are almost 41 million people being trafficked worldwide. And 80% of that is sex trafficking. So we're finding out that a lot of the people who are being sex trafficked are actually within the commercial sex industry. And so this is looking very legal as far as like pornography and strip clubs. You know, the average teenager actually enters prostitution or the sex industry at about 12 years old. And so it like is starting from this whole place of pain and trauma and sexual assault and abuse as a child. And then it's, you know, identifying as like on strip club, at strip clubs and on porn sites and in prostitution later on in life. And my goodness, there's a million things I could share, but probably one of the most important is that about 90% of women working in the sex industry say that they were sexually abused as children and that they can see themselves that there was a direct correlation between their childhood abuse and their job within the industry today. And my goodness, like 90% of them report wanting a different life, a different job, but they don't know how, like they don't have the means or the opportunity, to just start fresh and new. So man, it's just like a large people group within these establishments, right in our own communities that we all drive by. And we think, wow, this is literally a platform of histories of sexual abuse and sexual assault. And it's being glorified. And like, these are like tax paying businesses in our communities, you know, it just feels, pretty crazy. So anyway, all that to say, our team's heart is 100% just to build relationship with the women. We have no agenda. A lot of people ask us, what's your agenda? We don't have an agenda. Our agenda is just to build love and sisterhood with the women and to show value to them. And, man, it's been a real honor.
Oh, that is, I love everything you said. Thank you for kind of giving like a background on how this commercial sex industry is linked to human trafficking, sex trafficking, pornography, all of that stuff is linked. And I think that's something a lot of people, unless you are educated on this stuff, they don't know. So it's almost like they're separate elements in a lot of our culture's minds, and they're not separate. They're very much the same. So what's your favorite thing about what you get to do and all of that? Like what would you say if you had to pick one is your favorite thing?
Okay. Well, my favorite thing, honestly, is watching God's people love women in the sex industry. It's my favorite part. I grew up in a really healthy church where I feel like we were really, like taught to love our neighbor and to really genuinely love our neighbor, not just like love them to get them to convert to Christianity.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like love them for the people that they are today. And, so I feel like I had that, but I became somewhat disoriented into adulthood of that. A lot of God's people have really interesting, views of people that aren't Christians, that aren't following Jesus, and it's heartbreaking for me. And so it's been really reassuring to see, wow, people come out of the woodwork to love these women that we get to build a relationship with. Like it's unreal to me. A stranger who I have never met, read an article that I wrote and sent me $500 in the mail a couple weeks ago, like to go towards our ministry. I mean, just like that, so many times over, people are like, how can I help? What can I do? These women need to be loved and you're loving them. So I want to be a part of that. And I'm like, this is so at the heart of God. So that's my favorite. I love watching God's people love these women. It's just,
that's
incredible.
Really good. I just love that. I love how God like sends you little encouragements ever through other people, through his people. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. All of those really cool things and good things you get to see are obviously what kind of keeps driving you and your heart for justice and, makes it rewarding in a way to kind of go after this this fight that not a lot of people are going after, especially like locally in your communities. What's the hardest thing though? I'm sure there's like 500 hard things, but what would you say is the hardest thing?
Yeah, that's a really great question. The hardest thing is hands down seeing the exploitation, right in front of us. It's incredibly hard to see, to watch when you see such value in women and in all women and girls and women, and you know how God created them and crafted them specifically and intentionally and on purpose. And then you see people take their histories of abuse and pain and trauma combined with their lack of economic choice and lack of opportunity, and you put them in places where people can just essentially use them for their own pleasure and their own gain without any thought to the actual woman who lives inside of that body. It's heart-wrenching. Every time it's heart-wrenching. And a big criteria of our team is to go into the clubs with joy, because we believe the joy of the Lord is our strength. And so we want the women to feel loved and enjoyed, and we want to have a good time with them. We want to laugh with them and hug them and enjoy them. But in the middle of all of that joy, which runs deep and doesn't run out, even if the surroundings are terrible, God's joy is still there. But the exploitation is, it's palpable. It's right. It's rampant. It's really hard to watch. And, you think you've seen it all, and then you're like, whoa, never mind. I haven't seen it all. And that's hard. That's really hard. Yeah.
So you say you've been doing this for 6 years. Throughout that time, can you kind of, cause like you already mentioned a lot of facts, statistics about the sex industry in general, but what are some like big misconceptions that people have about this industry or the fight for justice in the manner that you're fighting for? Like, what are some cause I know I talk to people all the time. It doesn't really matter their generation, to be honest, but there's just not a lot of people that have or know where to find good factual information about this stuff. So maybe share some misconceptions, and then if you do have like good organizations or resources that we can go to kind of learn about it, that would be awesome too.
Oh, yes. Yes. That is one of the best questions I think I've ever been asked. Nice job. So I would say common misconceptions about the industry. Number one, the thing that I think people hear the most is that these girls choose this. This is what they chose to do. They chose to become a dancer. They chose to work on a porn site. She chose to, list herself online and be a prostitute. No, absolutely not. Trauma chooses this. Past abuse chooses this. Exploitations and men who will act like boyfriends and actually pimp out these women while linking that to their abuse and their trauma. The women often believe that these men really do care for them. So, pimps will actually sell these women in strip clubs and on porn sites. That's happening so much. So a lack of opportunity chooses this. Girls do not wake up and choose to go be in the industry. It's the opposite of empowering. I've never met an empowered woman in our 6 years of doing this. You get down and you hear their stories and you know, wow, she didn't sign up for this. This is not the life that she wanted. And she might be a great dancer. Like, these women are incredibly talented. Like, the strength that it takes, the physical strength that it takes to do what they do, like, they're incredibly talented women, but they didn't sign up for this. This isn't the life that they wanted. And so that's the biggest one. Women don't choose this life. And then the second one I would say is that trafficking often looks illegal. I think that most people think that, oh, trafficking, oh, we would know what that looks like. Like, that looks like somebody chained in a basement or in a brothel in in India. Like, that does happen. And yes, that's part of trafficking. But so much of the time, it actually looks totally legal. And so the person watching, like a woman on a pornography site or a woman at a club, you might think, oh, she chose this. This is legal. This is consensual. We're finding out more and more through statistics that most of it is not legal. This is very much coercion that's causing these women lack of opportunity. And like I said before, so out of the 41 million people who are being trafficked, 70% of the women that are being trafficked into the commercial sex industry. That's millions of people who are doing things that look legal, like totally legal. And that's where I'm like, I want people to understand human trafficking and the sex industry is not what you think it is at first glance. It's much deeper. And, as far as good sources to look at, I really like Polaris. I think that Polaris Online has probably the most credible information on human trafficking, especially. And then to learn about like the sex industry, mainly when it comes to the strip clubs, iamatreasure.com. Again, that was iamatreasure.com. That is a woman named Harmony Dust. Her last name is actually Grillo now. She got married. But she was a dancer for many, many years in LA, and she has started a ministry, to dancers about, man, many, many years ago. And they have incredible statistics on the industry information that's being updated often. And then when it comes to things like pornography, especially, I think Exodus Cry, they're online as well. Exodus Cry has incredible information and resource. They have a podcast people can listen to. I've learned so much of what I know from them. Yeah.
Awesome. No, I think I love that you say you've learned so much of what you know from resources like that, because I think a lot, like, so much information is accessible to us online now, so it really is so easy to look these orgs up and kind of get a feel for what we're dealing with. So we will link all of those in the show notes so people can kind of go directly to them and research whatever they need to know more about. Okay, so I want to switch gears for a second and talk about kind of how I stumbled upon your name and how I came to email you and all of that stuff. But I was working one day and followed the CPYU page and saw that there was a blog posted after the Super Bowl halftime show this year in 2020. And I was really struggling myself with what I saw on the screen and, work with teenagers, and my husband's a youth pastor. So we were like at a Super Bowl, party for youth group and chose not to show any of the Super Bowl because we knew that it was probably going to be pretty, raunchy in a way. So we chose not to do that, but we were home at the time that the performance was on and watched a part of it, and then we shut it off because of what was going on. But the way that you kind of vocalized it was so thoughtful, and it spoke to me a lot. I knew I had to like share the article, get in touch with you, because you linked kind of what you know about the sex industry to the over-sexualization of our culture and how that contributes to the sex trade industry. And it was just really, really good. And it talks about objectification and the entertainment industry. So can you kind of go into that a little bit? Like, you can talk about the Super Bowl halftime performance or other things you've seen in the media or entertainment industry that kind of provokes the sex trade industry.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good question. I really, really believe that the message is that children and teenagers, especially, and young adults are being sent, my goodness, from such a young age, that it is totally contributing to this idea and this picture of the industry. And unfortunately, I feel like it's, we're communicating to girls at a young age that their value is in their bodies and in what they can give and offer up with their bodies. Even in this age of like empowerment and agency within her body and all of this dialogue, which I think a lot of this dialogue is good. Like it's good that we're having these conversations. Mm-hmm. But within that, we're pretty much telling women that still, even if you're choosing this and you're choosing this life, that it's empowering for you, that this is good for you, that this is good for society. So we're doing this to women and girls. We're sending this message to them. At the same time, we're sending a message to boys and to young men, that like it basically that it's a free for all, that women's bodies are for consumption, and that even if, you know, now that everything, I'm so glad, is, you know, we're talking about consent and we're having these important conversations, we're still like encouraging boys to be boys, right? Like you hear this really ridiculous phrasing of boys will be boys. Well, boys, it's a sad day when boys are being brought up and it's being excused to take advantage of girls and women. And so, goodness, I think there's about a million things that are being told to young girls and young boys. But unfortunately, through all of that, when women are finding their identities in their bodies and boys are getting caught up in the mess of all of this, honestly, I feel bad for young boys and young men in our community. I don't even like, I don't even think it's their fault. Like, it's like it, the messaging is so strong that like parents and loved ones need to help guard that messaging that's being sent. So often boys are getting a hold of pornography at really young ages. And, it's a horrible, horrible thing because especially in a young brain, pornography is actually more addictive than cocaine. And when you have all of this going on, it can create like a life struggle with addiction to pornography just from like a single or couple exposure as a child. And so all of this is being sent. I mean, oh goodness, I could talk for a million years on this. My daughter is 8. She started dancing in ballet when she was 18 months old because I was like, how adorable will she be? She'll be this sweet little ballerina. And then we started doing a tap class, and I was like, great, we'll do a tap class. And then we would attend the recitals, and I started realizing, whoa, not my daughter, but the older the classes got, the more like risky the dances got, their outfits they were wearing. And I honestly feel like our society is training up little girls from very young ages to find value in themselves by their bodies. And I think that it's directly fueling all of this because unfortunately, if you tell women that this is where their value is and you tell men that this is free game and to act on all the feelings that you have, there's going to be victims of that eventually. Like, nobody wins in this situation when we're not choosing to honor our bodies and each other the way that God designed for us to. It's just a recipe for exploitation. It's a recipe for trauma, and it's a recipe for victimization of women. And my goodness, hear me when I say, I'm not saying that every man or every boy who has experienced this, that will be his story. But for so many men who are visiting the sex industry, who are exploiting women in the sex industry, they can tie their stories to childhood where it began for them. And so it is a very slippery slope and it is very connected.
Yeah, I think that one of the main things that we do is try to equip parents in the church, you have children and teenagers to have conversations about sex and pornography and abuse, trauma, same-sex attraction, all of these things that kind of we naturally kind of want to like guard our children from, right? And we want to wait till they're older to have conversations. But the numbers for the exposure of to pornography for young men and women now are, they're continually dropping, right? So I think that we're really passionate about kind of making parents see the facts of what culture is feeding kids. So I love the example of your daughter and her dance class and like you seeing as the girls got older what kind of was being portrayed. That's like a really simple example, right? Yeah. That you weren't really looking for, but because you're aware of everything going on, it kind of convicted you and made you think about what the purpose behind everything that they're doing is. So I hope that that makes some parents who are listening kind of evaluate what their kids are seeing or listening to or who they're interacting with and all of that stuff, because it does matter for sure from like a very young age.
It does matter. And when you, when we realize that sex is this incredible, we're prudes over here. Yay for the sex. Like, that is the gift from God within marriage. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But when we've taken it so far out of context, text where women and girls and even boys and men start to become victims of desire instead of mm-hmm. like covenant and blessing, it just becomes like, it's like the breakdown of society when we use each other. And we ended up pulling our daughter out of dance, partly honestly because she just doesn't want to wear the tights. Like, that girl, she's a rebel ballerina, she does not want to wear the tights. So it was like partly the tights and partly it's like, I'm gonna have to fight a lot of battles if my girls are gonna dance. So you know, I'm glad that for now it's like it's the tights, but my husband and I knew if she continued, we would have to have a lot of conversations with her dance instructors. Like, nope, she's not going to wear that. Nope, she's not going to dance like that. And that's very sad. Very sad. Yeah.
Okay. So can you, first of all, I hate tights too, so I'm with your daughter. I just think they're so uncomfortable.
They are. Oh, man.
Yeah. So more power to her. That's what I'm saying. But, okay. So I want to kind of wrap up by kind of hearing one of your favorite stories about hearing or about seeing or, hearing about God working and seeing the gospel work kind of in the brokenness that you see and the exploitation that you see. If you have a favorite story, share it with us.
Yeah. Oh goodness. There are so many. I think I would just, mainly share that I think that the gospel shows up in very ordinary, everyday moments with the person who's in front of us. And I think that that was the intention of the gospel. Sorry, I'm going to get emotional. I think that was the intention of the gospel. I think that was what God had in mind when he sent his son, that this would be a very personal story. And it was for whoever was right in front of you. And so, I think that that often just looks like sharing love and grace with the person in front of us and showing genuine care for them as a human. And so, my favorite moments are just seeing the ladies' eyes just light up. They call us the church ladies, which is just hilarious on so many levels. they have announced us over the NC speaker system in the clubs, like, the church ladies are here. We are here. Very funny. But to be able to enter their world and to show them the love of Jesus with no agenda, they don't have to give us anything in return, like we're not asking for anything from them. It's such a gift. And so I think that the gospel shows up in each of those interactions and each of those smiles and hugs and gifts, where we're imparting and instilling value. Man, we have shared the gospel with a woman, in a VIP room at a club in the very back corner with a black curtain drawn behind us. And it was so dark back there that you could barely see your hand, like in front of your face. Mm-hmm. And she sat us down and was like, "Hey, you guys have hope and I need you to tell me like, what is that? What can you tell me about that?" And so we just got to share with her about God's plan for her and how he loves her and he died for her and all of these things. And so through tears, we got to pray with her. And the hard part about this type of ministry, is that it's a lot of it is wrapped around addiction. And so many of the girls, even if they were to like leave, like statistically, she'll go back to the life 7 times. Like that's statistically because of addiction and identity and so many things wrapped up in this. And so when you're seeing that and you're seeing that play out and you just know there's so much value in just showing up for her again and again and again and offering resource to her, offering, like we've been able to help some girls with things like rent, with electric bills and groceries and, man, just girls walking through really, really strong struggle. We've got to hold women while they cry in our shoulder in the middle of the club. I can't really pinpoint one. Okay. Actually, well, this is a really quick one, but when the first year that we started this ministry, I remember a girl coming up to me and she handed me $22. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Here, will you take this?" And I said, "No, I'm not going to take this from you. Like this is your money and we don't want anything. We just want to come and be with you." And she said, no, "If you can do this for one more girl, please, please keep doing it." And I was like, okay, so it meant something to her to contribute. So we took her $22, but I almost like wanted to like put that $22 in a frame. but that would go against her wishes to use it. But because I'm like, she's seeing the value in this and she's telling us how meaningful it's been for her. So I think that simple interaction was probably one of the most powerful.
That's so special. I just love what you said about like the gospel being about loving the person that's right in front of you, like on that day. I think that's so good because I think that so often we like, I do this, we all do it where we like misinterpret the gospel as having to be this like grand gesture, you know, and when in reality, like a lot of what Jesus did is just like listen and be with people and eat meals with them and share life with them. And like, that's what you guys are doing. So I just love that.
Man, that's okay. So good. I couldn't like, I'm like, yes, girls, all of that. that is so, it's just so vital that we keep showing up for people and especially people who have experienced trauma in their life because mm-hmm. there is so much that God needs to heal in their hearts and in their minds. And we cannot talk to them about the fullness of everything that we in Jesus land know, when there's that much trauma, they need to be loved and seen in that moment. And that mm-hmm. is opening the door for the gospel for them. So, yeah.
So good. Okay. So when you think about, this is the last question, but I want to hear your opinion because you're a mom and, of daughters. Do you have sons or just daughters?
Okay. I have 3 daughters and 1 son. Yeah.
Awesome. So you're a mom to boys and girls and you obviously have such a heart for all of God's people. And I just am curious, like when you think about your own kids when they grow up or kids in your community and teenagers, What do you think that young men and women need to hear the most about what God says about honoring their bodies? Like, what's the most important thing that they can kind of take away from what God has to say about that?
Yeah, two things. One is that I feel like I could, like, yell it from a little mountaintop that you are not your body. You are not your body. You are not your body. And the other people around you, they are not their body. Like, we are complex, nuanced, layered, beautiful beings that God has created. We have minds and desires and talents and giftings and calling. We have all of this stuff. And we put entirely too much focus on our bodies. And we, of course, we need to steward our bodies. We need to take care of our bodies and because I guess I would say to young people, especially, but my goodness, to anyone, to the moms and dads listening to this as well, to myself, that if we are spending much time thinking about our body, we have started to, like, believe some of the lies that our culture is telling us. And we are just so much more than our bodies. So I would say that. Secondly, I would say that, like, I wish I could kind of grab each person's face, like, in a gentle, loving, motherly way, not in a weird, you know, like, scary way, but in a loving way, grab everyone's face and look them in the eye and say, value the people, value all of the people, all of them, value you, value them, value all of the people, because that is how we begin to heal wounds that have been inflicted on people that were not their choice. Like, many of the wounds that we have as people, they happened by something that was not our choice. And so when we will choose to look at people and say, like, hey, look, you're not your body. I'm not my body. You are a very complex being, and I'm going to show you value. And so for my son, as I raise him, I want him to know, of course, he's not his body, but that the women around him are such incredible, like, gifts from God that, like, you can't exploit something, that you know has deep value and that you honor. So it's like teaching honor, teaching value all day long. And that's very deep, and it can go, like, there's a lot of stuff behind that. But, I just really hope that we can see beyond our bodies, because my heavens, it's just a road for disappointment. Like, we're all going, our bodies are going to shut down and they're going to change. And, like, it's a disappointment. We are not our bodies, and our value absolutely does not lie in them.
Amen. That is so good. Yes. Okay. Well, we're coming up on time. We're at the time that we should have finished, but, I just want to thank you. I really admire your heart and the fact that you literally followed a calling from God that you had no idea, like, what it looked like or how you were, and it's been 6 years and you're still doing it. And, I'm just really thankful for you and, for your ministry, and just know that everyone who listens to this podcast will be praying for you and the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Really, really honored. It's fun to be on the Jesus train. That's a kind of a weird thing to say, but I feel like it's like he's a God who wants to reach the senior citizens, and he wants to love on neighbors, and he wants to do vacation Bible schools, and he wants the homeless to be fed, and he wants to heal the sick, and he wants to reach girls that are in the industry with the love of Jesus. Like, he's an all encompassing God. He doesn't leave anybody out. And so, it's a really big honor to be a part of that with him. And I'm honored to be here with you and for all that you're doing for young people and for helping parents see the realities there. Thank you for what you're doing.